For CertSecurity.com, I'm Rob Westervelt. You're listening to Security Wire Weekly for April 4th, 2007. This edition, we'll talk to Sean Barnum of Cigital about how attack patterns can be used to battle attackers and reduce risk. Barnum is working in an independent project with the Department of Homeland Security to get more security professionals using attack patterns. Also, Microsoft released a patch for a Windows ANI cursor handling flaw, but problems have been reported with the patch, and a researcher says Firefox is now affected. And finally, we'll take another look at the TJX security breach. Experts say there are a lot of lessons to be learned. Microsoft on Tuesday released a patch for a critical Windows ANI cursor handling flaw. The patch was released ahead of Microsoft's routine batch of security patches because of reported ongoing attacks. A number of security firms are reporting active exploits. The SANS Internet Storm Center raised its alert system to yellow. SANS said a number of sites are hosting malware that could exploit the flaw. In a connected story, some IT shops are reporting problems with the fix. Anyone having trouble should inform Microsoft by dialing 1-866-PC-SAFETY. Meanwhile, security researcher Alexander Sodorov said Mozilla Firefox is susceptible to the flaw. Firefox uses the same vulnerable component, Sodorov told readers of the Determina security blog. Next, we'll talk to Sean Barnum about attack patterns and how they can be used by your firm to defend against attackers. But first, this message.
Are you struggling to control the many aspects of messaging security in your enterprise? Keeping tabs on email security, instant messaging security, and mobile device security is a challenge for every InfoSec pro. But CertSecurity.com's Messaging Security School is here to help. Each on-demand lesson is packed with tools and tactics to help you develop and implement an effective messaging defense strategy. Learn essential practices for securing mobile devices, study countermeasures for malicious email code, and gain the keys to safeguard instant messaging. Start your coursework today at searchsecurity.com/messaging. That's searchsecurity.com/messaging.
And we're back. I met up with Sean Barnum last month at the Black Hat DC conference. He's director of knowledge management at security firm Cigital. Barnum is working with the Department of Homeland Security's Cybersecurity Division to get more IT professionals to use attack patterns. He had a session there at Black Hat to discuss this very issue. Barnum explains that attack patterns are a proactive way to be a step ahead of attackers by creating a blueprint to better understand their methods. So let's turn to this interview I had with Sean Barnum at the Black Hat DC conference in Arlington, Virginia.
Attack patterns are not new, right? Haven't they been around since like the 60s and 70s?
Not attack patterns in the way that we're defining them here.
Okay.
What we mean by attack patterns today is abstractions off of common methods or types of attacks attackers attack software with. There has been things in the past. Some of the related concepts are things like fault trees from Levinson, which is 60s and 70s. From a safety and reliability perspective, it was trying to identify certain fault modes as nodes on a tree, and then the events that would occur, you would follow to go from one fault mode to another, and at the root of the tree is the whole system fails or something really bad happens, and if you could block certain nodes on the tree that approach that root, you can prevent them from occurring. Similarly, Bruce Schneier and Microsoft have the concept of attack trees or threat trees, okay, which are instead of a fault environment, it's a security environment where the root of the tree is the objective that an attacker wants to do. Maybe that's own the system or get DBA authority on the database. And each node in the tree as you go down are specific objectives the attacker would have to achieve to be able to do that the next step up through some sort of an action. And the tree builds out. And overall, the goal of those is to get the big picture of all the different ways an attacker could try to get to that objective and try to find ways to block them. Well, in truth, what we're talking about attack patterns are paths through that tree from a leaf to the root node. Okay. So how do you actually, what are the steps that an attacker would go through? And trying to identify those as common ways that attackers attack software. So where you have from an IDS or an incident management perspective, they're identifying very specific exploits and attacks. The idea here that we're trying to get to with attack patterns is those are useful for building tools like IDSs, but those really aren't useful at that level of detail to a developer or a security analyst. So how do you actually provide those people the knowledge that really exists in all those detail attacks in a way that they can do things to prevent those attacks from occurring down the chain? A concept of attack and trying to analyze attack has been around for a while. The way we're defining attack patterns here is something fairly novel. It's only been around since probably about 2001. And attack patterns, as we're discussing them here, really came to be widely understood through the book Exploiting Software by Hoglan and McGraw, which took this concept of attack patterns that people have been talking about and actually said, okay, well, let's go look at a big pile of exploits and actually identify some. So let's put some reality to this concept. And in their book, they actually identified 48 or 49 attack patterns, specific instances of those. You know, in that book, each one was treated fairly lightly. There wasn't a whole lot of detail to it. It was mainly, a paragraph to a page of prose describing it. And they were really widely varying degrees of abstraction. What we're doing now with attack patterns, with the Common Attack Pattern Enumeration and Classification, CAPEC, which is a project funded by DHS, is to take that concept and that first step of reality they put to it and move to the next step. How do we formalize the description of these, not just in a paragraph or a page of prose that can be interpreted many ways, but how do we break it down and define a schema that defines what these things look like? What are the different criteria that we would want to understand? What are the different characteristics we want to describe? And then actually capture a set of those and make them available.
And that would make things much easier then.
Absolutely. To get to that level, exploiting software was valuable because it brought the reality that here's some specific instances. But those specific instances were only really valuable kind of from an educational type perspective of somebody understanding the need to understand this stuff. But they weren't really actionable to as broad of an audience because how do you know which ones you care about? How do you know what to do out of them? It was a little bit, there wasn't that much information there. So what CAPEC is doing is taking it and formalizing them, giving a set, and the initial set that'll be out here within the month should be about 100 patterns.
Where do you go to get that?
So
at least have a look?
It's going to be published out on a website, capec.mitre.org.
Okay.
So it's part of the DHS Software Assurance Initiatives, was funding it, and then because it has been implemented in a way to be integrating coherent with many other knowledge efforts that are going on, such as the common weakness enumeration and some other pieces, many of those are hosted as part of the MITRE Make Security Measurable activities. So they're hosting a site that's going to make this public. It's going to be out for review by a limited community here within the next week or two. Next week is the DHS-DOD Software Assurance Forum, so it'll be discussed there. And then within about a month, it should be publicly available for that set of 100, including the back matter of how they came to be and that, along with a draft attack taxonomy, which is, okay, if we're going to identify 100, how do we actually, which 100 do we pick? Mm-hmm. So part of the effort we did was not only defining a schema and building on 100, but come up with at least a starting point for a taxonomy of types of attacks of these sort. Currently, the draft taxonomy has somewhere on the order of 200 identified. In doing the research for this, try to find source material of these sorts of taxonomies that might exist. And what we found was most things labeled as attack taxonomies were very IDS-focused. They were at the signature level. Mm-hmm. They really weren't all that useful for this. And there really is kind of a dearth of resources available. You get the WASC threat taxonomy. You have some stuff from OWASP. You have some stuff from some of the different vendors in the area. But there's not a whole lot out there. The biggest one I think we found was something like 25 different types of attacks organized in some way. So this is a pretty big step beyond that, but we recognize that it's only a starting point.
I was going to say, what happens next?
Yeah, so once this stuff is put out there, the 100 patterns will be available for people to use and leverage, but it's also meant to be seed material to move the community forward.
Okay.
So it's meant to be, hey, this was funded by DHS, but it was funded not just to be valuable in that first step, but it was funded to be a seed to really urge the community to grow it, to identify other attack patterns, to create other attack patterns, to flesh out the taxonomy so that people know what's there and what needs to be created. So that should be out here within about a month.
I had a chance to look at a white paper that you put together mm-hmm. on, and you talk a little bit about a knowledge gap between the black hat attacker community and the software development community. Why is this a problem for software developers? And talk a little bit about the gap.
That gap has always, pretty much always been there since the beginning when people first started trying to attack software. You know, in the beginning, much of it was curiosity or, you know, it's ego boo. I could do this, therefore I'm going to try, you know, try and do it just because I can, or trying to see the challenge of doing it. At that point, the people who were doing these sorts of attacks were typically the real experts in computer systems. That gap has continued to grow even wider as the motivation for attack has changed from curiosity into malevolence and into monetization as it exists today. You know, the money is there for people who want to do things bad to hire the best software people.
Mm-hmm.
Those people work together. So just like people building software work in teams, you know, they're managed together. People who attack software share ideas. They work together. They not only have tools that they built themselves to do bad things, but because they don't have the ethical issues that us on the positive side have, they can use all the best positive tools as well, because they can just go crack the mechanisms that to copy protect them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so if you're a software developer and you want to go and buy the best rational tool or the best, you know, security scanning tool from Fortify or from whoever it might be, you have to make justifications to your management on how you're going to spend the money to do that. The attacker doesn't. The attacker can say, what's the best tool out there or the best set of tools out there? I'm going to crack those and I'm going to use them. And the knowledge they have of how to break software is not being taught to developers. Most developers are worried about schedules. They're worried about getting functionality in. And in the more mature organizations, they're worrying about building quality software.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, let's build it right when I'm writing the code, not have to throw it over the fence and let QA come back to me. But they're focused on getting that software built with as much features as fast as possible and hopefully in quality. But they're not necessarily, once again, thinking about that creative attacker out there.
That sort of leads into my other question, which was really about the stresses that software developers are under right now. Is there really, with all these stresses, is there really room for using this attack pattern method?
Well, certainly they're under pressure. The driving forces behind requiring security as a property of software are growing every day.
Okay.
More and more incidents occurring. You know, the whole TJ Maxx stuff that's happened recently has been a big wake-up call for a lot of organizations that knew that security is a problem, but on a risk basis said, okay, it's a problem, but it's not as big of a problem as, you know, for us to care about. Now they're going, oh, yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of drivers in that sense. There's a lot of drivers in acquirers of software starting to have expectations that software is of a certain level of security. You know, it really takes that sort of expectation by the acquirers to drive the makers of software to put the right investment into considering these things. One of the goals of attack patterns is to try to make this knowledge, enable the people to make those wise decisions of building security into their software easier to use.
Okay.
So it's something they're going to have to do anyway. They need to do this stuff. So does it make more sense for them not to understand the attacker side, but to be given tons of training on, you know, all the things that you could do wrong in software, vulnerabilities and weaknesses? You know, don't do buffer overflows this way. Don't you want to teach them that? But do you put all your effort into teaching them everything they could possibly do wrong? Or do you actually start to say, well, that's going to cost a lot of money. Where do we get out of the back? How do we blend that sort of training in a focused way with the things that matter?
Mm-hmm.
And finally this week, security experts say there are plenty of lessons to be learned from the TJX data breach. The retailer filed a regulatory document with the Securities and Exchange Commission last week. In the document, TJX said that 45.7 million credit card and debit cards were stolen during the security breach. Now, security experts say that security programs must be layered with the right mix of technology and people and policies. Enterprises must keep tabs on the level of access people have to the network inside and outside the company and be able to monitor user activity. And finally, security experts said that companies need to have a firm grasp on what kind of data is traveling through the network and ensure that it is encrypted at every access point. Well, that ends this edition of Security Wire Weekly. You can check out our previous podcasts at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And you can get the latest security news and information at our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.